Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgane, your host for the show. On today's show, we'll hear about historic preservation in Oregon. Shannon Maureen Smith is on a mission to save a barn.
We have such a unique place. It's one of a kind. And when this type of building is gone, it's gone.
Her barn may be the oldest wooden livery stable building in Oregon. In recent years, weddings and community gatherings have taken place there, but the building is in need of upgrades to resume hosting events. We'll hear some of the history behind the Neocoxy Creek Livery Stable and about Smith's crowdfunding effort to raise the funds for further restoration. But first, Devin Schwartz has the story of an Oregon family seeking to preserve native oak trees in the Willamette Valley. As more vineyards are planted, more native oak trees are felled. We'll hear why this family is working to preserve native oak habitat. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge. I'm Kathleen Morgane. The Northwest wine industry has grown tremendously over the last few decades. That's had a big economic impact, but the growth has also changed the region's landscape. In Oregon's Willamette Valley, you don't see a lot of oak trees anymore. Spacious oak savannas have been replaced by farms and vineyards. Devin Schwartz reports on one family holding on to an old oak tradition despite the odds.
Economists are predicting a global wine shortage. And that means demand for Northwest grapes will only grow. In Oregon's Willamette Valley, over 90% of native oak habitat has been leveled. A lot of it has been replaced by long, lucrative rows of grapevines. But the Doimling family stakes its claim not on wine, but on oak trees. The family owns 1,300 acres northwest of Salem. They manufacture wood flooring from sustainably harvested oaks. By thinning the trees, they hope to maintain forest health.
I feel like I have a responsibility as an Oregonian to be up here and be taking care of this place.
That's Ben Doimling. He says there's an expanding market for local hardwoods. But oaks grow slowly. They take decades to mature, and the oldest trees, legacy oaks, live for hundreds of years. On this cold morning, snow clings to oak branches and to grapevines on neighboring properties. The fact is, oaks may never provide the same income as wine. But Doimling says it's not about the money.
I think a lot about legacy, and I think the legacy that my dad and my mom have instilled in me to have an appreciation of this place.
Ben Doimling's father, Dieter, worked as a forester for German landowners. In 1996, his father died of cancer. Ben's mother, Sarah, had been a stay-at-home mom, but without hesitation, she asked to be trained in forestry. Like her husband, Sarah learned a technique called
Naturgemäße Waldwirtschaft, roughly translated as nature-based forestry, which tries to manage a forest as closely as possible as the way nature would.
When the Germans eventually decided to sell their land in Oregon, the Doimling family secured as many acres as they did by promising to maintain the oak habitat. Sarah says she's glad they did. A timber company bought three other parcels and soon gave the land a permanent makeover.
The timber company clear-cut all three the next summer, every blinking tree, and two of those three parcels are now vineyards.
Sarah Doimling says she feels like she too is continuing her husband's legacy. And even her six-year-old grandson is now showing interest. He recently asked if he was old enough to use a pruning saw. But the trend lines are clear. Ben Doimling just hopes vineyard expansions don't mean further loss of oak habitat.
We're down to the point where we have so little of our oak left that we shouldn't be converting more of that last 5% into other uses.
Some of the best grape-growing lands are also home to federally protected species, like butterflies. Fender's blue butterflies are endangered. They are no longer found on the Doimling's property, but they do thrive on a nearby wildlife refuge. Sarah envisions butterfly habitat someday stretching from the refuge to their home.
Long term, it's interesting to think of creating a corridor of patches of oak between here and there. They need to be reintroduced.
Entomologists say butterflies are a good gauge of an ecosystem's health, like a 21st century canary in the coal mine. In eastern Washington's wine-growing regions, native butterflies are already being reintroduced, and some Oregon winemakers are doing the same. Emily Gladhart recently certified her family's winery with the National Butterfly Association.
Butterflies are beautiful, and many of us have childhood memories of chasing butterflies.
In fact, a nature trail crosses Gladhart's vineyard, Winter's Hill. She says visitors can walk through a legacy of oak trees, grapevines, and butterflies. I'm Devin Schwartz reporting.
¶¶ The Neocoxy Creek Barn in Gearhart is possibly the oldest surviving example of a wooden livery stable in Oregon. Owner Shannon Smith is here in the studio this morning, and she is working to bring or make some improvements to the barn so it can be shared with others for public gatherings such as weddings and lectures and other public events. Good morning, Shannon.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And how did you become involved with the barn?
Well, I've been coming to Gearhart since 1961, and we basically spent summers here as a kid. My mom was a single-parent teacher. My grandparents bought their little cute postage stamp house and loved the beach, and we spent summers here crabbing and clamming. And I was also a horse lover, so I used to go down and peek through the wooden fence around it to kind of envision what it would be like to be in there. And in those days it was closed and looked kind of tattered and worn down. And then over the years I just always thought it was so great that it stayed there and it was right next to the beautiful creek. So in, I guess it was about 2006, it went up for sale, and I started talking to the owner at the time and had always thought, my God, it was such an amazing place. And really, being in the learning and development industry, I do leadership development, thought, what a perfect place to have as a community center and a gathering place for families and for the wonderful kinds of things that people love to do when they get together. So that's where I endeavored to buy it and make it into a community center and got started on this path.
And it's at one of the oldest livery structures. It's the oldest wooden structure.
It's the oldest wooden livery stable in the state of Oregon. There's another one down in Sheridan that sits in town, but it's kind of surrounded by other buildings. It has cement walls and some things, or some things they built in those days. But it's as far as we can now verify, one of those ones that were uniquely saved. Most livery stables, of course, were placed in the center of a town. And with the advent of cars, then they were removed. And there's very few actually across the country, lots of other barns and stables. But the livery was sort of unique in that it had a front door where the buggies came in and a back door where they went out. So it's a quite amazing building, and really actually miraculous that it was saved for us to continue to enjoy, and that it's on its original site right next to the Neocoxy Creek there in Gearhart.
So because of what it was used for, it's a fairly open structure and quite large. So what kind of uses has it had in the ensuing years?
Oh, gosh. It was many different things. Original livery stable went from the 1890 when it was built, from lumber milled right across the street and built to coincide with the construction and opening of the Gearhart Hotel, which was actually where City Hall is in Gearhart today. So it was a livery for approximately 20 years, and cars and such didn't get to Gearhart until a little bit later because they had the train and access on the boardwalks and bicycles and things like that that people used until the 1910 era. Then it became more of a riding stable for the next about 30 years, and Nichols Riding Academy had access to it. There was also a Dodson family that had it as a farm for a period in there. They had horses and cattle and oxen, I have been told. And then, but the Riding Academy was really interesting because it was owned by the Nichols family that had also property in Portland. And they would bring the horses down every summer for teaching lessons and rides on the beach. And according to Bob McEwen, who's in our video, he taught lessons there and got horses ready, and they had a round ring out back that they would actually play music and put on a loudspeaker, and so kids would learn to ride to the music.
So for most of its history, it continued to be a livery stable or horse-related till fairly recently. And what other uses has it been put to?
Well, just to go back just a tiny bit, in the war years, for example, it became World War II, the staging place for keeping horses for the blackout periods. And that point, you know, the There was worry about the Japanese along the coastline, and so all the lights on houses and such were turned down dim at night. So the horses were stabled there, and the good thing about that time period was then the Coast Guard followed on after the war was over and actually made some repairs to the barn, helped repair the roof and give some straightening and some structure back to it. And then the Eller family that owned it for the last, 18 years before I bought it in 2007, had used it as storage and place for their keeping of their family restaurant business equipment. But they did a lot of restoration on it as well to just keep it from going into further disrepair. So the fact that the Coast Guard stepped in when they did was absolutely incredible, and that it's still here today as a result of that.
So if you can keep it dry and keep a roof on it, you have a fair chance of salvaging.
We know, you know, hemlock typically would rot in this climate, but it was actually so well built. When we've gone underneath the barn, it's actually built on these giant logs that go right into the substrate every 5 feet, and they're about 15, 18 inches thick. And they built that thing so it was never going away. It's one of the most sound buildings I've ever seen in terms of to be so old and still be so amazingly preserved and upright. They really knew what they were doing.
So since you've had it, you opened it up to as a kind of a public venue, and what kind of things have you been doing?
Oh, I purchased it in 2007, and in 2009 we had our first event, which was a wedding for a friend of mine. And we always envisioned, when I first bought it, in fact, went to talk to folks in town about having it as a community center. I'd recently, at that point, been back to Chautauqua, New York, where they have, you know, their wonderful lifelong learning programs for people of all ages during their summer season. And I just, you know, I work in that field myself. So for me, it was like, oh my gosh, and this would be the perfect type of place and the building to make that happen. And then coincidentally also learned that Gearhart had a livery or had a Chautauqua building that was built in 1904 just across the creek. And so Gearhart had the Chautauqua interest and was always sort of an intellectual and I think a community questioning kind of folks that visited there. So the Chautauqua, I believe, was in Gearhart for about 13, 14 years till it burned. So, but the spirit of that and the kind of interest in arts and lectures and educational things had carried on, I think, for most of its early history.
What kind of response have you had from the community about its current use?
You know, I would say 95% of our residents absolutely love it, and they love the barn, and they love that we are doing a great thing to give it a new use for the 21st century and something that gives access to people to see it and appreciate it. I mean, it's 70 feet by 40 feet big with the hayloft still intact and the hayloft chutes, and it's a really amazing structure, and you walk inside and it has that kind of authentic ambiance that you just can't recreate. It's just a beautiful, very reverent building. And we've had these activities there, both weddings to anniversaries. We've had the town picnic there, which has been really wonderful, sponsored by the Gearhart homeowners. And I think for the most part, everyone has loved it. We've had a few folks that were upset and concerned about the noise, which we've been working very hard to augment and make sure that that's handled for the future. And I think Gearhart is typically kind of a residential town. So we're mindful that we're bringing something new to the area, but it's the right kind of new, and it's the right kind of wonderful transition for something that's really meaningful for people. So I think the challenges we've had, I think we'll be able to overcome because we're going to be careful about how we conduct ourselves and also, be a good citizen in our town to bring people together in all the positive ways that we can.
And you've mentioned some of the challenges, and I understand at this time that it's actually closed and you're not using it at this point.
Correct.
So what do you need to do to get it up and running again?
Well, we're in the midst of just getting our final We know what we need to do to handle all the different building requirements. We also want to do some really good upgrades that make it both easy to get around in, safe, of course, and also bring back that kind of unique Gearhart character to it that you don't see in very many buildings around. For example, we want to do wooden boardwalks. That I've seen it at a couple different places in Portland where they've put in old wooden boardwalks that you actually can reminisce that you're in the old days of early Gearhart. I think the other thing is to do things that really just give it, you know, protection for the winters and more upgrades to be maybe a three-season place, not just a one-season place. Barns are traditionally meant to have open air flow through them, so it makes it rather cold in the wintertime, but it's got such charm and that. So we've got some basic building stuff, as well as in our other kind of goals to get it not just beautiful, but real functional for long-term use, and that it can take care of itself really well there at the site and enhance the local community by being a great place to visit.
Well, that sounds like a pretty big job, restoring something of this age and the size it is. Maybe what more than just one person can really coordinate. Yeah. And it sounds like you're getting a group together, an
yes.
organization to help with the restoration.
Well, I've been at this now 5 years, and you learn a lot along the way. I got into this not even knowing what restoration of a historic building was like, let alone opening something as a community center, though I've handled lots of events in my professional career. This has become a labor of love, and I've been able to connect with lots of preservation folks. Astoria is rich in folks that know preservation. There's also several Gearhart residents that are fantastic about the places they've restored here locally that have been really helpful. We've gotten great folks around that have helped us with the building codes and the right kind of things to do and the sequencing of that. We've had terrific engineers. So we really looked at it that way. But the biggest thing lately is I've joined a barn task force that's part of what's called Restore Oregon. And it's based out of Portland, but it's the most great group because there's a group of us now that are helping to assess this kind of unique historic resource. Barns are actually being lost more frequently and for, unfortunately, you know, reasons of they can't be transitioned to new structures, more so than any other historic building. So there's a real push right now in Oregon. It's one of their top priorities for this group and also the State Historic Preservation Office to focus on agricultural buildings and that what they call their outbuildings to save them and to support their reuse into new structures. So there's a lot, big push and some more support that's come with them. Really great experts that know about restoring these buildings. And then it looks like we'll have further fundraising down the road that can help us as well.
So you've formed a core group of people who are working on this specific project. Is that a formal organization at this point?
Well, if you go to the Restore Oregon website, I think it's restoreoregon.org, they have it's called Heritage Barn Task Force on the top of their screen. You can click on it and it shows beautiful pictures of local barns around the state and then gives information about this initiative. The Oregon ones are being cataloged and now soon photographed and documented for what they've served as a purpose in the old days and how they need restoration now. So it's a terrific group, and they're looking for both, you know, everyone that can do the work to folks to help support them for fundraising or for the kind of transitions, what can they be used for now, and to get a real initiative in place to help save them so we don't lose them.
So is this Barn Task Force specifically concerned with restoring the Gearhart barn?
I'm one of the folks on the group that's been meeting monthly. And so they're aware of what we've needed and are very supportive. We've got some new resources from them in terms of cataloging us for the historic register, making sure we get all our requirements done to get on that. That's another project you have to take on. But also making sure that we do it responsibly and historically correct. So the group has been tremendous. And then we have a couple writers on board that are going to help write about it and also help with more publicity to make sure these types of places are saved.
And will you be forming a specific organization just for this one project?
I want to, and I think now we have the right team on board to do it. So it'll be some local Gerhardt folks as well as then some folks that we know historic buildings and also know codes and transitions for these buildings to be of current use. So I'm really excited because our team is knowledgeable, positive, and they know what it takes to save this resource. So I've had a good learning curve and great help now to get caught up to where I need to be.
Okay, what would you say some of the top three projects you need to get going with to reopen the barn so that you can turn it into a venue, money-making venue again?
The top three are, one is there's structural supports. We did some previously, and we have to do three more areas of the building. We got a new engineer on board, Tim Walden of Manzanita, who is great. And that involves a rod and turnbuckles and some new design that will make the barn still, you can see all the actual wood and structure of the barn. It won't cover that up. So that's one. And the other one is just our revised ADA access. We had ADA there previously, but we are reworking it to, again, incorporate these wooden boardwalk areas to make it super accessible, and then opening up some of the other doors. Our rear door of the building is 12 feet wide. It's one of the original barn doors that was built in 1890, and it's still the wood functions, but the hardware is given out. So we've ordered new hardware for it to put that in and just make some simple upgrades that way that we can have easy inside access in and out. And then we've added lighting and we've upgraded all the electrical. We just have some new lights we want to put in that are kind of barn appropriate. And the last thing we want to do is, again, redo some of the spaces for serving food. And we have a catering kitchen on site, but we want to make sure that that's brought up to upgrades, as well as then some restroom facilities that will help make it easier instead of go out to the back 40 as they used to do. So those pretty much cover the main list.
Okay, well, that's an ambitious list. And in order to get this done, of course, you're going to be searching for some funding. Do you have some in place? And I know you've got a Kickstarter thing going. So could you describe some of that, too?
Yes. We've done funding campaigns before. In 2012, we had, or actually 2011, we did an art and history day and had artists and lectures by Bill Berg, who's our local historian, about the early history of these, the founders of Gerhardt. And it was kind of neat because we did focused on some of the workers. But the current campaign is through a Kickstarter program. I was fortunate to meet the videographer that helped with the Columbia Theater's Kickstarter and got to talking with him and asked for his help for our barn. And music and art are one of my favorite things. And the barn is so incredible for that because the acoustics are really great. And it has the hayloft above, so sound is just really beautiful. And people have loved to sit there and enjoy, like the town picnics have been very nice because we can be inside or outside on our acre property. So it's been one of the things I felt really good about, that we've had that sort of support. Kickstarter is an interesting fundraising project. It's all or nothing. You set your goal and then your rewards to reach it. And Tyler Little, who's of the Columbian Theater and works at the Voodoo Room, I think, as well, was our videographer and helped do music for the project. And there's a great little video showing Bob McEwen, our 91-year young resident of Gerhardt. He's the last person in town that has horses. He has a Shetland pony and a iconic donkey named Poncho. So we filmed Bob coming from his home over to the barn in his buggy and wrote a little song about it too that was so charming because it's about helping save this the building. And what's really great about this too is that Bob worked at the barn in the 30s and 40s when it was the riding stable, the Nichols Riding Academy. So he gives an interview at the end of it that talks about its original history, what he remembers from those days of early Gerhardt, and all the things that were really unique about this place, and gives kind of his own spin on, you know, why we need to save these buildings, that there's, you know, they just don't make wood like this anymore, nor do they make buildings that, you know, have this kind of feeling. They just don't, it's just not out there. So he gives that perspective, and then we have really great rewards that you can have, for example, a lunch with Bob and talk with him and enjoy his retelling of history and stories. And also then pictures with he and Pancho, which is really cute. And then things like horseshoe earrings or horseshoes that are actually going to be stenciled and calligraphied with names of people and then the barn. They can either hang in the barn or go on people's porches with the horseshoe up, for, of course, for good luck. So we're really enthusiastic. We've had a slow start because of the holiday, but we know that we'll get there by January 19th. And this is just the kind of community that, that helps with those things.
So you're trying to raise how much by January 19th?
We're looking for $35,000. We wanted to make sure we got enough to get our work done and put a little fund in for anything unexpected. And we're on our way. We're, you know, one of, I think, a lot of organizations out there that are searching for money this time of year, but we have such a unique place. It's one of a kind. And when, you know, when this type of building is gone, it's gone. So it's a very important project. And I think everybody relates to it in its own way, that it's so charming and it's got so much to offer the community. I'm a big person on giving back and making sure that we all have places to share and feel connected.
So if people are interested more in the barn, they can either go on the web and check out the Kickstarter campaign for the Gerhardt.
It's under, if you go to Kickstarter.com and you can Google in or place in Love the Gerhardt Livery. And you can find us that way. You can also, I think, just put in Gerhardt and it will come up. We also have a Facebook page, Neocoxy Creek Barn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Shannon Smith, for coming in and talking to us
about
the Gerhardt Livery this morning. And we'll go out with the music that you were referencing earlier.
Thank you. It's a great song, sung by Gina Baker.
And that's all for today's edition of The Bridge. We welcome your comments on the show. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1. That's NEWS, then the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. I'm Kathleen Morgain saying thanks for listening, and join us again next Thursday morning at 9 for more local and regional Northwest stories. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.
I hope I haven't rolled across your feet.